Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 11th, 2012. And last week, we had a little bit of trouble with the sound about 30 minutes into the show. And I don't know where exactly the fault came, but it's in the archive. A number of people pointed that out. But so what I'll try and do this evening is talk through the topics that were kind of garbled there. It only lasted about a minute, and so I apologize for that. I'm not really sure what happened, but there were some important thoughts, so I will cover that in this week's show. We work those topics into this week's show. And also, I forgot to give the date on last week's show. I usually give the date at the beginning, so that's something to identify each show with the particular date when it was given. I want to start out with a quick commentary to new listeners. A lot of people every week, there are new listeners to this show, and of course there's the many people who have been listening for a long time. But people are searching out there. They're searching for answers, and not just because they want to sit in their armchair and imagine what's going on in the world. They want answers because they want to know how to run their life to make decisions. We live in an extremely confusing world, and that's on purpose. Everything is mumbo jumbo, change, expect politicians to do something, and every 4 years there's an election, and gee, will this guy make a change? No. This has been going on for 100 years, and nothing is changing. And then literally for 100 years, as we move into 2013, 1913 was when all of the changes came in, when the Federal Reserve was installed, a foreign bank running banking in this country, and all of the changes that went with it. And gee, isn't it odd that World War I came on the heels of that, and developed a tremendous amount of resources, not to mention reserve mining. Gee, isn't that name reserve that just keeps coming up here? So people now, there are some people who are waking up to the fact that something strange is going on. Something's just not right out there. And so they're searching around and listening, and what you'll find is there are some people that seem to have good answers. They seem to be out there fighting for the public, but they really don't do anything. They don't give you any real solutions. They just sit there and chatter about how things are. Some of them are good, and some of them are controlled. They're fishing outlets designed to misinform the public. The way I tell people to understand these is to look for what they don't say. There's a lot of stations and broadcasters, talk show hosts, that say a lot of things, but there's certain things they don't talk about. And those are the people that are government controlled. So that's one way to see this. But the average person is simply looking for answers on how to run their lives. And what I've pointed out on this show and with my work is that science is central to our lives. Well, of course, computers run everything. Everybody's in a database. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about space science, and I'm talking about what I call the garbage science that's pawned off on the public from NASA, from the space agencies, from the federal government, from the various alphabet agencies that run the scientific aspect of the government. And you have to understand that there's an entire layer of science above what you see. You don't see any of that. In fact, the vast majority of science you don't see. You occasionally get to see a pretty picture from the Hubble Space Telescope, and you think, wow, that's cutting edge. How amazing. Or you see the shuttle go off. The Hubble Space Telescope is very busy doing research, but you never see it. The shuttle is a joke. It's just been a smokescreen to make people think that that's the ultimate in space travel, and it's just an absolute joke for the people who really know what's going on. So, and now they're even canceling that because it's an unnecessary expense, because they can fool the public without it. But the bottom line is, people are searching for answers. And what does bad science, what does bad astronomy do for the public? It hides the reality of what we should be doing, because the universe has a very beautiful design, a very simple design, and it's meant to be lived in very, very comfortably, very easily. For example, energy. Energy controls everything we do. I was giving an example. I was a guest on a show yesterday. At another show, I was talking, and I said, take a hot dog. You go to the store and, you know, buy a hot dog, or you go to the hot dog stand, you buy a hot dog. 99% of the cost in that hot dog is unrelated to the hot dog. You're paying for insurance, you're paying for energy, you're paying for government taxes at all different levels where that was produced. And, you know, the poor little hot dog is worth about a penny if you paid a dollar. So how can a society exist when that's what's going on? Well, it can't. It's breaking down. And as it breaks down, the greed at the top just gets greater and greater. So can you stop this train wreck from happening? No, because at the top levels of government, it's run by corporate greed. How can you stop that? And the congressmen are paid off all the way up to the president. And by the way, the presidential candidates work for the same group of people, the international bankers. So how can you live your life? What can you do? And so I've developed a concept. It's called First Nation. And it's where you don't depend on a political party. You don't depend on the government to support your, subsidize your life or whatever. You simply start living your life. Live your own democracies, because like the Roman Empire, like every other empire that's ever come before us, this empire is going down in a ball of flames, and it's going to take a while. It's going to take a while for this baby to crash and burn, and it's going to take a lot of people down on the way. And the idea that everybody needs a 40-hour-a-week job, most of the people working are doing useless work. The main sources of income are in energy, are in communications, and things that should be just little teeny bubbles on the side of a normal economy. But those are the biggest portions of the economy. So what that tells you is we don't have an economy. There isn't any. And the president and the Congress and the state and the local politicians are just there to make you think that something possibly could happen. So how do you solve this in your own life? Well, you don't. You're not gonna stop this train wreck. So what you have to do is simplify your life, change your life so you are independent, and go about your life as much normalcy as you can. So at any rate, that's to new listeners. And so what you'll find in my show is information about science, the real working of the cosmos. And when you realize how simple things should be, including the fact that there's an immense amount of electrical energy passing by our planet every day, and yes, we can tap into this. We don't need oil, coal, nuclear power. And we don't need these. In fact, we're using far too much energy running around paying interest on bank loans for houses and cars. And that's all people do, is they run back and forth to work so they can pay interest on loans. So clearly, you have to get out of this racket and take yourself out, because the people that are left working there, the 50% of the people that still have jobs, are going to keep grinding it out until the bitter end, because they're the few that have jobs, and the rest of the people don't have any say. They've fallen through the cracks. So how do you stop this train wreck? Well, you don't. you're not going to, any more than you could stop the Roman Empire from collapsing. So you just got to get yourself out of it. Find your own path, find a way to live, simplify your life, get rid of a lot of that stuff that you really don't need or want, and look at your life from a distance. What do you really need in this life? What do you really want? Most people, by the way, don't really have a good family life. They've lost sight of what's important, the people around them, their friends. They've lost sight of all of this. And so what are they doing? They're chasing a dollar to try and pay interest on loans that, you know, and they're really lost sight of their life, their values, their goals. So at any rate, and central to this is science. If people really understood that, yes, there are Planet X objects out there, yes, they do come into the solar system, and we've had many of them. I want to give a little Planet X summary here, and a lot of people are looking for answers on that particular subject. Let me do this. When I was a kid, I had one of my teachers give a very good example of life. When we look at what's going on in the world, it's like looking at the back of a tapestry. Now, a tapestry is like a medieval sewing. They sew the colors into the front side, but in the back side are a bunch of loose threads, and it kind of looks like the design, but you really can't tell what the beautiful tapestry on the front side looks like. So what we see in this world, from our perspective, and with all the misinformation on the evening news, the misinformation of science that's thrown at the public to confuse them, all we're seeing is a mishmash of the backside and a very little portion of this tapestry of life, and especially when it comes to topics like Planet X. And if you go up into the very top layers of high security government information on Planet X, which we know they have, they really don't know. And that's probably what scares them more than anything. They don't have information. How could they possibly have information on all of the different Planet X type objects? So one of the biggest misinformation ploys out there regarding Planet X is that there's only one. No, there's a lot of them. And they could come in on million-year orbits, 200,000-year orbits, 10,000-year orbits, things that have affected Earth in the past. And not every one of them is going to bring in an extinction-level event. So Earth is affected, but by many of these at varying levels. And so, yes, they're going to come in the future. But the biggest thing, the biggest fear topic of the people in control of the world, the bankers who control the Federal Reserve in this country and the little puppet government that's running this, that pretends to run this country, the biggest thing they fear is that the public is going to wake up and find out that these Planet X objects come in. And guess what? The very next thing you're going to figure out is that those clowns have no control at all. Not only do they not have control, they don't know about these things. They don't know when they're going to come and which one is going to do damage. They've got a lot of supercomputers and a lot of highly paid physicists, astronomers in the black ops world trying to figure this out. But the reality is they don't know. And so they're certainly not going to let on to you, just like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. He's not going to let on that he doesn't know anything either. He's got to be the great Oz with all the answers. Okay, so anyway, given that as a summary, and this is for the people who've been listening for a long time too, understand that nobody has all the answers regarding Planet X. A lot of people ask me, well, when's it going to be here? And I tell people, well, what are you going to do if it were going to be here next week or next month or in 10 years or 100 years? What are you going to do? we should be living our lives according to nature's plan, which accounts for that in the future. It might be 2,000 years. It might be in 2 weeks. So how are you going to live your life? It's certainly not what we're doing today, chasing the almighty dollar and using oil like it's going out of style and driving up and down the road with SUVs and going to McDonald's and, gee, all of the things that are necessary for today's life. You wouldn't do any of it. You wouldn't do any of it at all. So, okay, enough said. I'm going to talk a little bit about last week's show. It's a must-listen show. And let me just give a little summary here about what I was saying when the show was garbled. But go back and listen to last week's show. I talk about all of the impending conditions of a comet that's right now it's coming into the solar system. I believe it has a fairly significant nucleus. It's going to have a major interaction with Mars in October of next year, and I believe that Mars could have its orbit changed, at least slightly, or for sure the comet nucleus is going to have its orbit changed, and so we're going to have, and it's going to be kind of a difficult thing to predict. We cannot predict, even with the best military computers available. There are many unknowns in the equation to understand where this comet is going to end up in the solar system. So, next October, it's going to have a very close interaction with Mars. And the very interesting thing about this is that nobody is talking about this. Nobody is mentioning a peep about this in the standard science world. They're completely eliminating the close passage by Mars. And so that tells you something. Also, all of the little puppet wannabe internet end-of-the-world people that usually jump up and down when a comet comes in the solar system, all of those are quiet as a church mouse. And I know which ones they are. Like Comet Elenin people that tried to use my name, saying Comet Elenin was going to cause all kinds of Earth disasters. All of those websites are quiet as a church mouse because they're told to be quiet. Why? Because the people running the show up at the top are deathly afraid that this comet is going to be the one that wakes up the entire world. I'm not talking about just Europe or the United States or some people that read glossy magazines about astronomy. I'm talking every person on this planet. 6.5 billion people are going to wake up to the fact that I'm right and NASA's wrong. And about what comets are, that the comets are plasma discharge of the solar capacitor, and that these babies have potential to do a lot. Well, what's the first thing on people's mind when they learn that? Number one, the government's been lying to them, and the government's had a major program to lie to the public. Second, that there's nothing that the government can do about these things, so they're going to lose face, and that there's a tremendous amount of energy out there that we can tap into as a civilization. So, you know, we're just marching down this wrong road, and this comet could be the backbreaker. This could be the one that literally breaks the entire world to understand that we got to clean out this leadership that's all over the world. They've got to be cleaned out, excuse me for the expression, but like a den of cockroaches, they got to be cleaned out. Every last one of them, and they can never be allowed back in powers of position. And I might add that there are many, many, many well-intentioned people out there working at low levels, say the CIA or the FBI or local government, and they think that they're saving America and the, you know, democracy, and they don't know that they're being used. They're being used to allow the people in control of the world to manage, to maintain that control. So at any rate, with that in mind, I'm going to talk a little bit about what I was saying last week's show when it got garbled a bit. I was talking about the interaction of this comet with Mars and the fact that this comet, C2012S1, which is now beyond the orbit of Jupiter, this was the entire content of last week's show, was a discussion of all of the things that are going to happen with this comet. But as the show got garbled last week for unknown reasons, I was talking specifically about electrical interactions with Mars. Mars will be in the morning sky at that time, and so will not be very visible from Earth to amateurs or professional equipment. So it would depend on space-borne equipment, and I was mentioning that I will be trying my best to get good data at that time from good equipment. And so the point I was making was that the ancients saw lightning bolts passing through the sky. This is what Velikovsky talks about. And by the way, this is why there was so much effort by Tier 2 professional astronomers to try and drown out the voice of Velikovsky or any effect, saying that no, this couldn't possibly happen. And a lot of people were greatly rewarded. Carl Sagan, Gould, people like that from the geology world were greatly rewarded for destroying Velikovsky in the eyes of the public. What, Stephen Jay Gould won all kinds of prizes for literally stealing Velikovsky's concept of radical rapid change in evolutionary biology. Stephen Jay Gould won tremendous post-mortem prizes for his basically stealing Velikovsky's ideal. Carl Sagan got to do the Cosmos series because of his efforts in destroying the name of Velikovsky. So in central to all of the information that goes out to the public is trying to destroy the idea that comets can be big. My work, which shows that comets are plasma discharge of the solar capacitor. And in the tier one layers of science, they know I'm right. They know I'm right. Because I talk to those people and they know that what I'm doing is correct, but the garbage science that's pawned off on the public says comets are little puffy snowballs. Okay, so in that garbled part of last week's show, I was talking about the electrical discharge between Mars and this comet, which should be very visible as the comet starts getting close. We could see some serious activity on Mars. Mars will be lost in the coma. There's going to be some terraforming issues going on with Mars. Mars could gain an entirely new atmosphere. It could have its orbit changed. And then I mentioned that the military back in the 90s had an event that they measured with military satellites. It was an electron beam that hit Earth from Jupiter. And they said it was just like a railroad train of electrons, electron beam. And basically, we got caught in the sunward side electrical discharge of Jupiter, which discharges the solar capacitor. And we got caught up in that. It was like a discharge to Earth. And so at any rate, this was actually measured. That's what I was talking about when the show got garbled last week. Then I mentioned that this comet will be where the tires meet the road as far as showing that comets are not dirty snowballs, but that Mars interaction is key because if the comet nucleus is big enough, it could alter the orbit of Mars. Mars could have a very different orbit after this comet encounter, and so the standard science, the garbage science that's pawned off on the public, the internet, whether it's Scientific American magazine or Discover magazine or any of these glossy magazines that pretend to be the top layer of science for the public, that really are control mechanisms to pass off the garbage science to the public, especially in the area of space science, and astronomy. The real issue is that the interaction with Mars is going to be a big event. Whether Mars has its orbit changed or not, is this going to be a big event? So there's going to be some effects. But the strange thing, as I said, is that nobody is talking about this. They don't want the public to know about this. They don't want the public to think about it or see it or think, because this could be the backbreaker. And then when this comet comes into the inner solar system, if it's on a new orbit, it could be a comet that's with us forever. It could be a new planet in this stage of formation here. So Venus, the comet, took over 600 years to become a planet. The ancients were dominated by that. The ancient Mayan calendar, which kept adjusting back then, this is the ancient, not the modern Mayan, tracked the planet of Venus. It was based on the cycles of Venus, not on the sun or the moon or anything else. It was based on Venus. And by the way, when I was talking to people that are new to this show, and also the listeners from a long time ago, it's interesting that the modern Maya, when I talk about ancient Maya, I'm talking about 1500 BC, about that time frame. The modern Maya, which adopted their cities, rebuilt their cities, etc., and adopted the writing and the numerical structure, calendars, etc., from the ancient Mayas, the modern Maya lived around 800 AD, developed some of what we see now, Chichen Itza, Uxmal, those major cities, Tikal, you know, that are in central, southern Mexico, Central America. Those people around 1300 AD, it is said, just abandoned their cities, and nobody could figure out why. Some people say, oh, there was a drought. But no, what really happened was the people, the governments got goofy, just like is happening today. And the people simply, all of the war and the conflict and the human sacrifice and everything that was going on, the people just said enough, and they walked away. And that's what's happening today in today's society, is one by one, people are waking up and saying, you know, I can't deal with this anymore. Goodbye. I'm out of here. So long. And they pack up and they leave. And that's all there is to it. They just take what is necessary. And that's when you find out what's really necessary in life. And then you find out who your friends are and who the people that you love and want to be with. That's there's some downsizing that goes on there also. So at any rate, just the fact that the modern Mayas around 1300 A.D., just abandoned their cities. And why? Because things got too goofy. Okay, well, I'm going to move on with the rest of this show. Just a quick mention here. There's a guy, Felix Baumgartner, I believe it is his name, is going to jump from 120,000 feet. That's a long ways up there. At the edge of space, he's going up in a balloon, and then he's going to jump and hopes to break the sound barrier. Well, I hope Felix doesn't break anything else, but jumping in a NASA-looking spacesuit. Anyway, that's just something in the news. But the thing I liked about the images I saw of him is he jumped out of something way up there, and he had this set of wings strapped on, and so he's flying like a human space shuttle coming back in to land at Earth. I thought that was rather interesting, seeing a guy with wings strapped on his back flying at high speed into the atmosphere. Just a quick comment, spaceweather.com. A number of weeks ago, I said that they were doing some they had some very strange behavior going on. And this is ongoing. They are continuing to report auroras. Now, you would think that would be the goal of spaceweather.com, is to promote space weather as it affects Earth. But the reality is there's nothing going on, and so they're trying to create news talking about auroras near the Arctic Circle. So every day, every week, they have announcements, and today was no exception. They're talking about auroras at the basically near the North Pole. Well, there's no news here because the auroras are there every day, 365 days of the year. So it would be like announcing that there's a horse race out at the horse race track. You know, it's like, yeah, that's what the horse race track does. The horses race there. And it's the same issue, that the North Pole or the Arctic Circle, there are auroras every day of the year, 24 hours a day. So why would you report it like it was a big deal? And so that's the strange behavior. But I guess the only thing you can say is that there's nothing going on, so they have to report something to make it look like there's something to report. Okay, this past week, SpaceX, the private company, made the first unmanned cargo ship delivery to the space station. And once again, this is kind of the garbage science that's pawned off on the public to make you think that this is some kind of a big deal, when we know that there are all kinds of space development programs, black ops programs going on in the background that you never see. The other night I was on Coast to Coast AM, and as a guest, and I was talking about sunspots, and I made an off-the-cuff comment, and I thought I should repeat that on this show, that the sun does not have enough power to evaporate water from the oceans, and so we are basically in a drought. That's why there's a drought. The solar energy is very, very low. There's really not a lot going on here. There hasn't been for years. The sun is at a low ebb. And back in the Hale-Bopp days, I pointed out that comet, being in the solar system for a period of about 6 years, pumped up the energy of the sun, because what it did is it drained the solar capacitor. It's like basically a charged body of gas and dust that's held back way beyond the orbit of Pluto by the solar wind. Hale-Bopp discharged that for a period of 6 years. So what happened? The sun was very active. We had very active storm seasons, a lot of power in the storms. We had typhoons in the Pacific with 300-mile-an-hour plus wind. And I said, you know, the sun could rebound and go into a negative mode, a low-energy mode, after this thing leaves, and that's exactly what is happening. So I believe that that's the cause of this, but the end result is that the light from the sun is at a very low ebb. The electrical conditions in the solar system are at a very low ebb. The solar dynamic pressure, the solar wind dynamic pressure, at near zero for months and months and months. The solar capacitor drained, and the solar wind is very weak. We've had some CMEs, but they're very weak CMEs. So at any rate, the CME that just hit Earth, that SpaceWeather.com is talking about, only caused auroras up around the North Pole, which is where they generally occur anyway, so nothing to write home about there. Certainly nothing that extended it down into Canada or northern Russia, Siberia, or down into the northern states, which you would expect from a good CME. But the sun is at a very low ebb, which brings me to talk about the Atlantic hurricane season. We're just running to the end, around November 1st. The end of the Atlantic hurricane season, which runs from about June to November, and it's been, as I predicted, a dud of a year. We've had storms try to develop, and they just couldn't. There was just not enough energy in the solar wind, the passing solar wind, which drives down through the ionosphere to drive the tropospheric weather systems, the hurricanes, etc. And it's just not been there. So what do we have? We have a sun that doesn't have enough power to evaporate the Earth's oceans, and we're heading into a cooling period. The northern hemisphere winters are coming very much sooner. It could be a terrible winter a doubly terrible winter for England and the Northern Isles, all the way up to Northern Russia on the North Sea and up to Scandinavia, because the mid-Atlantic northern current that comes is fed from hot water from the Gulf has stalled because of the BP oil spill. It is still stalled, and so that warming water will not be passing up to England. Plus, we have a low energy situation in the sun. It could be a very bad year for England. And the question is if there will be enough energy in the solar, the light that comes down to evaporate enough water where they will have a lot of snow like they did last year. So it may be a very cold, dry winter. That's the prognosis for what may be coming this winter. But we are in the northern states of the United States at least a month advanced in winter. It's already snowing in the northern states, and they've already recorded snow in early October. And a very cold climate. It's the leaves have already fallen in the northern part of the states, and the southern mid-states are already experiencing the leaves falling. So it's well a month, a good month in advance. The apples matured a full month early. All of this happening indicating that we are heading into a very cold winter, and it will probably last through May in the northern states. Okay, on to the next topic. Oh, the corn sale is about to end. We're running out of corn, and I thought it, I didn't know exactly when this would end, but if you're still interested in ordering the corn, there's still some left, and we will be, as soon as it's when it runs out, there will be no sale next spring of corn. So it's either buy it now or forever hold your peace. This is the dense corn, the non-GMO, the no chemicals, no fertilizers, no sprays. In fact, you can eat this corn. It's for seed. It's seed corn, but it's the kind of seed corn that you would have found on the family farm in the 1930s before GMO and all of that. But it's a very good price. $40 for a 10-pound box, and then plus $10 shipping. And as I said, it's running out. So as soon as it runs out, we will pull it from the web page. And it's shipping, so if you're still waiting for corn, we're busy shipping this, and you should see it shortly. But just a fun fact about corn. This year, the corn was at about 20%. Basically, we had a national corn failure. Corn is the biggest crop in the United States. It drives the prices of all the other grains. So the price of grain and food will go up around the world, and it's being used for fuel. The government subsidizes every year a tremendous amount of corn. The price of corn has tripled since the government began its subsidies. And it turns out that they passed laws requiring companies, gas stations, to mix ethanol with their gas, and this has been seen as a good thing by ecologists, but the real issue is that it's a terrible thing. Corn takes a lot more energy to grow than it produces. And let me just make another little fun fact here. In 1970, the average number of bushels of corn per acre was 25. Today, in 2012, the average number of bushels per acre, this is when it's growing properly, the GMO corn will produce up to 150 bushels of corn per acre. That's what? that's six times what it produced in 1970. But in 1970, the farmers could still save their own seed and grow it the next year. And also, you could eat the corn. What they're growing today is GMO, and it's poison. It says right on the bag, not fit for human consumption. So at any rate, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, and the corn is still there. That will be ending soon, and if you order more than $300 worth of any of the other items, combination of any other items, you get the corn for free, plus you get the calendar for free, the new recalendar Sunstar clock. Okay, so this week I have to put in a patch of something that I did not include in last week's show. By the way, you have to go back and listen to last week's show. It's on the archive subpage of my homepage, jmccsci.com. You have to listen to last week's show. And so this week I went through the details of what were lost, what were garbled last week, but then also an additional item that is very important regarding Earth. Okay, what is the first test electrical connection with an interplanetary object and a planet in the inner solar system? The first real test of this comet and the strength of this comet is going to occur January 15th, right around the corner, January 15th, 2013. And so we are going to be in a perfect, near-perfect electrical alignment with this comet. Now, what does that mean? Well, the comet itself will be out near the orbit of Jupiter. It will have crossed the orbit of Jupiter, but dropping down almost into the plane of the planets, the ecliptic. And so we could have some serious worldwide weather around the January 15th time frame, but that's not the only issue here. On January 13th, we have a new moon. So 2 days later, the new moon passing, and if you read my weather book, that is the key. About 2 days after the new moon, well, what's happening? The new moon blocks the solar wind. The moon is between us and the sun, so the moon becomes a comet. It's outside of our magnetic field. It's independent out there. It's basically a comet discharging the solar capacitor and taking the brunt of the solar wind that's coming in our area of the solar system. 2 days later, it moves out, it moves away, and all of a sudden that connection, that blocking, kind of like a big football lineman blocking for a little runner on the football team, the moon moves out of the way, and all of a sudden the solar wind comes pounding in, compresses our magnetic field, which had expanded in that comfort zone of the new moon. The Earth's magnetic field expands. All of a sudden now, the moon moves away and that charge of solar wind comes pounding in on the upper magnetosphere of the Earth, compresses it, and that's a trigger mechanism to set off storms and activity on Earth. But it can't do it alone. But it just so happens that we have Comet 2012-S1 in a perfect electrical alignment with Earth all the way out to the orbit of Jupiter. So this comet is coming in on almost like on a beeline path towards the sun. So it's going to be well into the full discharge all the way to the sun of that capacitor. And so the end result, the simplifying this in layman's terms, January 15th, 2013, will be the first real test of this comet. And that's a time when you would not expect hurricanes. You would not expect severe weather over land. We're probably going to have a very bland winter in terms of storms. We'll probably have steady high winds like we've been having, but not in terms of concentrated storm systems. That's something to look for. I want to mention that back in 1999, in May, I made a prediction based on a comet called Comet Lee. And this was in May, and I said September 6th, 1999, there was going to be some serious storm activity because I saw a whole series of planetary and electrical alignments lining up on that particular day. And I said, this is unusual that we have this much in terms of electrical alignment. So we're going to see some serious weather. And so around September 3rd, 4th, et cetera, my detractors out there, the paid government little NASA Trekkies that run around trying to defame my name and work, they were laughing. Ah, McCanny said this, and he had this prediction, and nothing is going on. Ah, ha, ha, ha. Midnight on September 6th, five full-blown hurricanes developed in the Atlantic Ocean, including Hurricane Floyd. There was severe weather, over 60 tropical storms developed in around the equatorial band of the Earth overnight. And so the silence of my detractors was almost deafening. There was a perfect prediction. It was something I saw coming, and it put basically the nail in the coffin of traditional astronomy, because the main people who are trying to criticize me were astronomers and also meteorology. It showed that meteorologists cannot predict the weather because they don't know what causes the weather. So at any rate, that's just an example of one of the alignments that I called and hit perfectly on the head, and there's a number of those that have happened over the decades. This one is very interesting because we have very low solar wind conditions. We have a very low energy solar capacitor. So there's alternative conflicting situations in the solar system today. So this would be very much more powerful if it happened 10 years ago when the solar capacitor was at its peak. But now we have a very weak solar capacitor, the solar wind is fairly weak, but I would say still we're going to see some activity here on Earth on January 15, 2013. And as I said, the comet will be just across the orbit of Jupiter, so this will be the first test for Earthlings of the power of this comet. And also at that time we'll be able to look out and see this comet in the night sky, just to the left of Jupiter in the night sky. So that'll be very, very interesting. It'll be at perfectly high noon, so to speak, but at high midnight, you might call it, in the midnight sky. It'll be directly overhead at midnight. And, of course, if you're in a zone that has daylight savings time, you'll be off by 1 hour. But it'll be just to the left of Jupiter. Jupiter is the brightest object in the sky in the nighttime, and it'll be about, two hand widths to the left as you extend your hands out away from your body at full length, about two hand widths to the left of Jupiter. So, and at that point, it might be a naked eye object. In other words, you could see this object in the night sky with with the naked eyes, or certainly with binoculars at that point, and then experiencing the Earth weather at the same time. Once again, as I said, this comet over the next year is going to give us some very, very interesting views. One of the views that we're going to see for sure, whether the orbit is changed or not, is a broadside view of the comet, where we can see the broadside view. And I think this comet is going to be like the comets of old, which they talked about having many tails. If you saw Hale-Bopp back in the 90s, it had a single kind of constant tail. With good equipment, you could see through that. There were some photos taken with a Swan filter by a professional astronomer in Florida who used a Swan filter, and the 14 to 17 tails of Comet Hale-Bopp were very visible, ion tails, and these were swinging around like snakes attached to the nucleus. Tremendous flow of water into the comet nucleus and other chemicals which were being created in that comet tail, something that the government did not want people to see. I've been fighting this battle with basically against the government and the government scientists for decades now. And they have this tier two layer in there, and they keep calling these things little snowballs. If you look at any of the standard press out there, they're just fluffy little wanderers and little and icy and wanderers and little and fluffy and tiny and insignificant and can't hurt anything. Everything in the book to try and dissuade the public from understanding. And yes, most comets are little. Most comets don't cause Earth disasters. But the big ones do. And that's why they keep pumping on this. One of the best examples is that Comet Halley, that comet that returns every 71 years, Earth passed through its tail in 1910. And there were dire predictions that there was a poisonous gas in the tail and that there would be deaths, people would die. And people actually jumped out of windows, committed suicide based on those predictions. And, of course, nothing happened. Well, why? Because Halley's Comet is a poofball of a comet. It's a very teeny little comet. It has a very faint tail. But the big comets, we're talking about the ones that created Noah's Flood. If you want to know about that, I have my two CD set out there, the lectures, the physics of ancient celestial disasters. And one of the lectures in there is regarding Noah, the Noah's Flood, where we spent a long time, probably 30 to 40 days or longer, in the comet tail. And that's what the Great Flood was all about. One of the most important formative events in the history of man, when a good deal of Earth's population died in a great flood, is denied by modern science. Nobody in the churches talks about it. They probably wouldn't keep their 503C status if they did. But at any rate, the comets can cause major disasters on Earth, but it's very rare. But this comet, now by the way, this comet is not going to have what I would call major effects on Earth unless its orbit is changed, unless the orbit of Mars is changed. We have to see where all of that sorts out after that encounter with Mars, which occurs October 3rd, 2013. So almost this time next year is when that comet will finally make its way in to encounter Mars. So, but I want to emphasize that this encounter with Earth is, the comet will not be close to Earth. It's simply an electrical connection. The comet itself will be out near the orbit of Jupiter, very far away. And so physically close, no. This comet will not, in its initial pass, be physically close to Earth unless its orbit is changed when it hits Mars. Or when it gets close to Mars. That's a poor choice of terms there. When it hits Mars. No, when it gets close to Mars. And I want to emphasize, too, the lack. If you do Google searches, typically a comet like this would have all the nutcases jumping up and down on the Internet. It's going to be the end of the world. Comet Ellen and people, the SOT.net people would be jumping up and down and screaming. And all of these disinformation sites would be, all of the nutcases would be jumping up and down screaming the end of the world. But they're not. They're not saying a word. The only thing you can find on Google is the standard government glossy outlets like Scientific America or Discover Magazine, or I'm not sure if Discover is there, but I saw Scientific America at the top of the list, or some of the other standard government pages. They do not want the public aware of this comet. They want it to pass by and pretend like, well, it's just one of those fluffy little snowballs. See you later. Goodbye. But the reality is this comet is, I think it's going to have its orbit changed. I think that orbit is going to slow down. I think it's going to pull it into the inner solar system. And we're going to have a permanent new member of the solar system working to become a planet. Or at least a moon being adopted by some other planet. This is going to be a show that's going to go on for a long time, and NASA is working its hardest to head any information off at the pass, so to speak, to keep the public from understanding anything about this comet. They just, it's kept at a very, very, very low profile. I couldn't say very enough times there. Extremely low profile. And they do not talk about this interaction that the comet will have at Mars. Mars, I believe, is going to have a new atmosphere. It could have mountain building. We have very good pictures of the surface of Mars. My weather book has 8 plates that cover the entire surface of Mars. High density. We went to great lengths to print very high definition photos in that weather book. Those are not just average pages. Those are very high definition prints of all of the surface of Mars. And after this comet comes by, if it's big enough, we could see some volcanic activity on Mars. It could ignite the volcanoes of Mars into action. So a lot could happen here. And we have the point of having good pre-event photos of Mars is then we'll have the photos of Mars afterwards. And if this comet does develop into a huge comet with a huge tail, Mars will be literally within that comet tail, and if Mars' surface gravity is larger than that of the nucleus of the comet, which it probably is, it's going to drain off a tremendous amount of material out of this comet tail, and we could see a real terraforming event on the planet Mars from a comet. Now, do you think NASA and the world leaders and all the people that defamed Velikovsky, do you think those people want you, the public, to see this happening? Nope, not at all. Or to see the orbit of Mars change, this would tell the public, or electrical discharges between the comet and Mars, this would verify everything that they've been trying to downplay for the last 50-plus years, and probably 35 years with my work. So this is very interesting. I'm running out of time. I'll be certainly talking about this comet and other events in the future. Make sure you listen to last week's show, and make sure you go to the webpage. There's a lot of good offers regarding water filters. My books and DVDs are there. And make sure you understand what's going on regarding science. And I want to welcome any new viewers, new listeners to the show. Make sure you come back every week. And if you cannot visit the live show, remember all of the shows are archived on my webpage, jmccsci.com. And thanks for listening. And I have the greatest audience in the world. It's not the biggest audience, but it's the best. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.